All right. We have a special guest with us. Again, he was with us last week. He is still here with us. And I'm so excited to have my dear friend with us here from San Francisco, Jeff Garner. If you missed last week, he is with us for a few weeks. And come on up. You're always welcome. Do you have your mic turned on?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
He's just been a blessing to so many of us. And one thing that I haven't mentioned is that we have First Wednesday worship coming up this coming Wednesday. And we're going to have another guest speaker. Mike Hayes is coming to speak to us. And this is a connection through Jeff Garner. He's never been to our church before, but Mike Hayes has been connected to me through other mutual friends. It's really, really cool to have him with us. But he, you can share a little bit about him, but join us on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. It's going to be a fantastic time. But come on, one more hand for Jeff Garner. We love you.
Good morning, everybody. Nudge your neighbor and say, great things are happening around here. Yeah, there's some exciting things going on. I don't know. I just love being a part of something that I feel is just where God is at work. God is, you can sense God's presence. You can feel God's presence. You see, you know, the activity of the Holy Spirit going on. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful to be a part of that. I've had a couple moments over here during the worship time. I don't know. The Dove song was like, man, that was like on point. That was like, that was over there. I was flittering over there. I was just like, woof, I'm getting off the ground here just for a couple seconds. So it is awesome to be part of something that, you know, we can see God moving and God work. Just a quick word on Wednesday night. I forgot about that. Mike Hayes, who is my co-author, we wrote a book together. It just came out a couple of weeks ago. It's called Real Happy, Jesus' Surprising Path to Genuine Joy. And it's basically a path going through the Beatitudes using the word Makarios, which really means happy. And happy are the poor in spirit, happy are the pure in heart. So he'll be here on Wednesday night, and I'm really excited to see him. He lives in Dallas, so it'd be great to be here with him. So today, we have been journeying through John. And this whole year, we've been walking through the Gospel of John. And I thought it would be helpful for you just to maybe have a little bit of an insight as to where the Gospel of John, where it's going, what it's all about. Did you know that in the Gospel of John, there's actually a mission statement that says what the Gospel of John was written for? And it's at the very end of the book, and it says in John chapter 20, verse 30, it says, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples. We've only talked about one of those signs, water to wine. Next week, we'll talk about the second sign. There's a total of seven signs. But he says, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that, this is the purpose statement, this book is written so that you may, number one, believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. So the first purpose in the Gospel of John is we call there's an outsider reading. And for somebody that's here, if you're here for the first time or you've never experienced a committed life to God through Jesus Christ, you never come to faith in Jesus Christ, this book is for you. You can pick it up and you can read it and it will guide you into believing in Jesus. It will bring you to faith. And so as we're walking through this, in fact, it was just 2 weeks ago, we baptized, you know, 59 people. Yeah. And these are, you know, there are these moments, these milestones along the way where we come to believe. And if you're here and you're like, it's my first time, you are in the perfect place to come to experience what faith is. And this book will awaken faith within you. It'll like wake it up. All right. But the second purpose is for those of us that have maybe been walking with Jesus for 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, 50 years, whatever that is. And it says, and that by believing, so you've already come to believe, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. How many of you have been, you know, believing in Jesus for, you know, over a week? You've been believing in Jesus for over a week. All right, man, this is a perfect place to preach the gospel then. So What this says to all of us here that have had any kind of experience in our faith journey is that there's one place where we come to believe, but it doesn't end there. This book, as you're reading it, will help you kind of put on Jesus' skin. You'll see through Jesus' eyes. So you can have an outsider reading, or there's what's called an insider reading. And as you're reading this, you'll gain this kind of supernatural, mystical, spiritual way of living out Jesus' life in San Marcos, Wimberley, wherever you are from, wherever your neighborhood is, whatever your work, you'll have this experience of, as you read it, that you begin to live out Jesus. In other words, we all know that Jesus died and rose from the dead, but what we sometimes don't realize is that Jesus has flesh and blood, boots on the ground in San Marcos, and that is you. That you will come to a point to where it is no longer you're living your story, you're living, building your name, building your little empire, but all of a sudden you begin to live out Jesus' story and what he says right here, have life in his name. You will actually begin to have Jesus' life as if Jesus was in your neighborhood, Jesus was in your church, Jesus was in your workplace, your school. You'll begin to experience what it is like for Jesus to live through you. That's powerful. And that's been happening here in Promised Land. It's been happening for years. It's continuing to happen. And this year, it's another year of it happening. So it's really, really, really exciting. Which brings us to our topic for today. Now, if you're reading the Gospel of John, you know, in the first 10 centuries, there were no chapters and verses. It would be like just one book. And you would read it. And what you would have read, before we get to today's story, is you would have read this story about John the Baptist saying, you know, I rejoice, my joy is complete. We talked about this last week, the completed joy. I rejoice because I hear the voice of the groom, the bridegroom. I hear the voice of the bridegroom and I rejoice. Now there is this, we call motif, there is this thread throughout the Gospel of John of weddings and marriages. And so this is one of those, when we're trying to describe the spiritual thing that goes on inside of us, the spiritual encounter, we have to use all kinds of metaphors and words to kind of get at. And so when we're talking about Nicodemus, that was like born again, born from above, right? And now we're trying to describe there is something that is happening inside of us that gives us unending and unstoppable joy, that gives us an unquenchable peace. And so we're trying to describe that. And one of those metaphors is a wedding metaphor. Like what happens, the kind of joy and excitement that happens at a wedding. Love. And so we get this picture when John the Baptist says, Jesus is the bridegroom. I'm the best man. There's a wedding. He turned water into wine. And so now all of us are going at this point in the story. If you're tracking, you're going, well, who's the bride? And that's what this story is about. This story is about how Jesus meets his bride and has this beautiful extension of love and grace that comes into her world. And a lot of us would think, well, Jesus has a bride? What kind of a bride is she? And what we learn, our story today, is about how Jesus takes someone that is completely full of shame, isolated, despair, that is lonely, heartbroken, and he takes a person like this and he fills them with unending love, incredible joy, and makes them the life of the community party. That's the story. But we have a long ways to go to get through the whole story. So let's start here. In John chapter 4, beginning with verse 7, it says, a woman from Samaria came to draw water. I guess I should start a little bit before that so we all kind of know. John chapter 4, verse 5. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Samaritans, there's a long history that would be worth unpacking another time. But I think the best way I could describe this for you is the tension that exists between Palestinians and Israelis today is very much the tension that existed between Samaritans and between Judeans or Jewish people. There was terrorism happening then. There was all kinds of fighting and violence. There was discrimination and prejudice. And so that's kind of the setting of our story. Jesus goes to this town in Samaria. Think of like a Gaza. Think of Gaza, a Jewish person walking through Gaza. And then you kind of get, I think, the feel of what's happening here. And he comes near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. So just a couple of things, I think, to create the setting here is, one, Jacob gets mentioned again and again and again in the book of John in different ways. In John chapter 1, the ladder where the angels were ascending and descending is Jacob's story of being asleep in Bethel and the angels of God ascending and descending. It kind of marks the beginning of Jacob's story with God. The second story that happens in Jacob's narrative is he meets his wife, Rebecca, at a well. In fact, it's not just Jacob that meets his wife at a well. Isaac's wife is met at a well. Isaac's wife, Rebecca, is met at a well. Jacob's wife, Rachel, is met at a well. And Moses' wife, Zipporah, Moses meets at a well. So wells in Jewish folklore are the place of marital meeting, the place of love and romance, the place where it all kind of happens, that moment where, when did you meet your wife? Where did you meet your wife at? It's that moment, the well, all right? So Jesus, right after the talk about, I'm the bride, the best man, John says, and he's the groom, right after that, the next verse is Jesus is at a well. If you were living in antiquity and you were reading this, you'd be like, oh, I get it. I know exactly what's happening. This is where his bride's going to show up. So Jesus is wearied from the journey. He sits down by the well. It is the sixth hour. A couple of things I want you to know about the sixth hour. First, Jacob meets his wife-to-be at the sixth hour, noon. So we should be thinking, Jesus is paralleling Jacob. This is the, okay. But the second thing to know about wells at noonday time is that typically the women went to get water from a well in the morning and in the afternoon, in the evening, not in the middle of the day. And there's a couple things that clue us into the kind of woman that this is, in that she comes to the well alone. And in antiquity, the women were always together. They supported each other. Here she is all alone. So it kind of brings us to a moment of recognizing that not only is this woman from Samaria, but when she addresses Jesus in verse 9, when he says to her, give me a drink, she says, how is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? John is saying here that race and gender frequently get in the way of us receiving from God. And it still is that way today. Many times gender and race can be the only things that we see. And Jesus has something to offer this woman that will transcend her being a Samaritan and him being a Jew. He's going to offer her to become his bride. Now, what is it that we know about this woman? I think if she's isolated and she's alone, I would say that she is dealing with shame. And I think this is a story about shame. She comes alone, she's isolated, and one of the clues to this is at one point Jesus says to her, go call your husband. And she says to him, I don't have a husband. And Jesus says, true. For you have had five husbands, and the man you're with now is not your husband. And immediately, a lot of times we tend to think that, oh, she must be an adulterer. But he doesn't say that. He doesn't say you've had five husbands because you've committed adultery. There's a hundred reasons why she could have gone through five husbands. They could have died. She could have been divorced because she wasn't able to bear children, which in antiquity, if you were not able to bear children, you did not have any value. And so that could be the issue that's at play here. It could be that she has some kind of cultural shame that she's bearing upon herself. Maybe it's because she feels that she's cursed. All of my relationships end up defunct. They all fall apart. I've been in seven committed relationships, and every one of them is, it could just be that she feels rejected and that she's alone. So before we jump to a conclusion that she's, you know, an adulterer or she's this or she's that, I think we should just stop and go, the point is she feels ashamed. The point is, it doesn't matter why we feel shame. Jesus, why doesn't he explain what her reason was for going through five husbands? Because it doesn't matter. The point is, she is isolated and alone. She feels worthless. She's coming there all by herself. The point is, love always covers that. It doesn't matter what your reason is for bearing shame in your life, what the reason is for you being under a load of shame. Jesus wants to heal that shame and the trauma of that shame in your life. That's what he comes to do each and every time. And he wants to give something to you, something in here that springs forth into life and doesn't just cave in on you and make you feel death and dark and depressed and feel like the whole world is caving in. So Jesus comes to us and says, I want to offer you life. And it doesn't matter why. What is it with us always wanting to affix blame on someone or something in order to understand what it is that we're going through or what it is that they're going through? Well, she's feeling this way because this, she did this and she did that, as though that solves it. Jesus is not here to affix blame. I have come that you might have life and that you might have it to the fullest, he says in John. I have not come to condemn the world, but that the world through me might be saved. Nudge your neighbor and say, I'm not condemned. So, he shows up to bring life to this woman. So, a couple of things I just quickly want to point out to you about shame and what shame is and what shame it does. Number one, there are different kinds of shame. We can have body shame. Body shame is that feeling that, you know, you feel like your body type isn't the right type. You can't fit in. A lot of younger people experience this and go through this where they just feel shameful because their body type isn't the right. They're not muscular and their physique isn't right. Or, you know, maybe it's a certain feature on their body. And so they feel shame about that and they don't want to be in pictures. They don't want to, so they feel this. That's shame. That's a real thing. Cultural shame. I was in Mississippi here a few months ago and I ordered a salad. And the lady that was taking the order snarkily said to me, and she didn't know, she had no idea, but she just was like, she's like, you must be from California. I was like, God. I felt like really, I was like, awesome tri-tip on top of that, please. You know, we can, there's all kinds of cultural shames that we can feel, or moral shame. I was exercising in the gym just, this was maybe 3 years ago, and there were two ladies that were walking on the treadmill next to me, and I overheard the one say to the other, she's like, I just so badly want to go to Mass for Easter this year and receive communion, but I can't because of the divorce. And the other lady was like, I'm so sorry. And so there was this heaviness, this shame that she was under because of that, and my heart just was breaking for her. And she was, you know, crying while she was talking on the, so it could be that. It could be religious shame. You know, I didn't pray enough, and so I feel shame for that. Or I didn't do whatever kind of religious, you know, system that you're in, and they have all these benchmarks that you're supposed to make, and you don't make them, and so you start feeling bad about yourself. Like, something's wrong with me. And we feel sad. Or toxic shame. I have a real close friend of mine. His dad used to, when he was younger, used to just constantly berate him verbally. You'll never amount to anything. You're so stupid. You can't even mow the lawn. Just on and on and on. To this day, even though his dad has passed away, to this day, it's like that voice is just constantly in his head. And he feels like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I just feel like I'll never amount to anything. Or superstitious, like, I don't know why bad things always happen to me. That kind of shame. It's like, it's almost like we anticipate it and we have this kind of faith that says something bad's gonna happen. No, foreboding joy. As soon as something good happens, it's like, well, when's the boot gonna drop? When's something bad gonna happen? I just know something bad's gonna happen. And it's like a shame, a burden that we bear. And that's what this woman is coming to the well with all alone. Shame isolates us. Shame throws us into loops. Shame keeps us bound by something. And the power of how shame works is its secrecy. It holds something in secret. And by holding it in secret, it keeps that engine going all the time where we just feel bad. So if guilt says to you, I feel bad because I did something wrong, then shame says, I'm the wrong. Guilt is more of a private matter. Shame is more of a social matter. Shame is more of how people look at me and what they think of me when they look at me. And guilt is just what's going on inside of me. And there may be a mixture of both of these going on in this woman. We don't know. But what we do know is that she feels shame. And what we also know is that by the end of the story, Jesus effectively deals with that shame in such a way that she is completely healed and she is running into the village, boldly declaring, come see a man that has told me everything that I've ever done. So I think when I read this story, there are two things that stick out to me that I find that we typically do. The first thing is we typically, as the story says in verse 8, his disciples had gone away to buy. This is a familiar refrain that you get in the Gospels. The disciples are always about go buy. They think the solution is always out there. Money will fix the solution. So when they're you know, there's no food and they're sitting on the hillside and they're like, Jesus, send the people away to go buy. And Jesus says, you feed them. And they're like, all we have is 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus always looks for the answer that is within you. You don't need to go by. Or this woman will say, should we go to Jerusalem? That's what you say. Or go to this mountain. And Jesus says, look, it's not about Gerizim and it's not about Jerusalem. The answer is in you. The true worshipers will worship in spirit and truth, which, by the way, is lowercase, which he is saying, it will happen inside of you, your spirit and your truth. And I know a lot of times we may hear that he's talking about the truth and the spirit, but there would be an article, the, in front of it if he was. He's saying that you have to come to God honestly. You have to come to God with your truth, and you have to worship him in spirit. This is not a location that you go to. It's not something you pull out of your pocket and you pay for. It's something that will happen inside of you. What? In me? Yes, inside of you. So Jesus says to this woman, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that was speaking to you, you would ask of him and he would give you living water. And this is the key. If you've got shame, this is the key. If you've been dealing with shame, this is the key to understanding how it all gets unlocked. If you knew the gift of God, Dorea, which is unique. It's not just a gift. It is if you knew the extravagant, abundant gift, that God is a God of abundance. Whatever your need is, there is more than enough. Could you imagine walking over here to the, what's the spring right out here? Yeah. The famous San Marcos Spring. Could you imagine walking over there to the aquifer, to standing there and going, man, I'm kind of thirsty, but I just don't know if this would quench my thirst. He's saying, if you knew the gift of God. Second thing he says, and who it is that is speaking with you. This is that, we call it a recognition energy, that there is something inside of you that is pinging for the real God. Pinging for the voice of God. There is something in you that will recognize the real thing. You may be sitting here right now and you're recognizing something is speaking to me. Something is happening here. I feel something inside of me that's reaching out for something from God. And there is this longing in here for that can quench my thirst out there. And this is that moment of recognition where he said, if you would recognize who I am, which she does recognize it, then you would say, give me this water. Give me this water. Somebody say that right now. Give me this water. In other words, you're going to have to get vulnerable and you're going to have to ask for it. This is that, the vulnerable truth. The answer always to dealing with shame is vulnerability and authenticity. It's coming out and going, and this is what happens with the woman at the well. Jesus says to her, go call your husband. And she says, I don't have one. He says, you've had five. And the woman, and the one you're with now is not your own. And she says, truth. You have spoken the truth. She doesn't deny it. She doesn't hide from it. She doesn't pretend like she's got it all together. She's very vulnerable with Jesus and says, this is my truth. My life has been a mess. I'm hiding. I'm hunkered down in shame. And then Jesus says to her, at that point when he says that, the disciples come back. And after coming back, they're puzzled as to why he's talking to a woman. And she leaves her bucket and runs to the village and says, come see a man that told me everything that I have ever done. In other words, I came here to get one kind of water, but now I don't even need that. I'll just leave the bucket here. You guys would not believe who is at the well. It's about 20 years ago. Probably 20 years ago, I had was speaking in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and I was touring with a group, musicians, and we had this big kind of truck with all the equipment in it, and we're staying at a hotel, and after the service that night, I went to the hotel, and I thought, it was after midnight or right around there sometime, and I thought, I'm going to grab me something to drink, and then I'll head upstairs to my room. And so as I walked to grab something to drink, there was a lady that was standing there that, you know, looked like she was a sex worker. I just thought, and I was like, oh, I was kind of wrestling. Do I want to get my, what if somebody comes out and sees me talking with her, and they think that I'm doing something? That, you know, it was just like all these thoughts in my head, and I was just kind of nervous, and I was just like, but I'm so thirsty. So I just like really quickly kind of walked over and turned my back kind of and was putting my money in, you know, and getting my soda. So I get my soda and I turn around and kind of walk out. She goes, excuse me. I was like, oh, shoot. I was just like, I was so paranoid. Like, you know, if somebody sees me talking to her, this would not look appropriate. And so I was like, so I kind of turned around. She goes, so I just had to stop you. There is this just glow all around you. And I was like, I didn't say this in the previous service, but I was kind of like, okay, is this like a new line or something that you say to people? I'm not really sure. I don't know if that's a pickup line, but I'm not falling for it. She's like, there's just this glow all over you. But I just felt the Holy Spirit say, this woman needs something. Needs my presence. And I felt like God, and this is before a conversation, I felt like God was saying, she needs to be baptized tonight. So I turned around to talk with her, and she said, what is that? And I just said, well, it's the presence of God. That's the only thing I can think of. I just came from a service tonight where God's presence was there just in a very rich and beautiful way, and I think I'm just still walking around in the joy of it. I'm just feeling God's presence. And I said, I think that's what it is. She goes, I want that. I really want that. And she goes, I am here on a drug bust. I'm a police officer. And she pulls out her badge, and she shows me her badge, and she said, I'm an undercover cop working on a scene. And she goes, I just found out this morning I've been given 6 months to live. I have terminal cancer. And she goes, I'm done. And she, at this point, she's at a point of tears. She goes, I'm just done with all of it. She said, I'm estranged from my kids. I have three children. I haven't seen them in over 2 years. She goes, my life is a mess. And now I'm told that it's over. She said, I just want something. I was like, hold on. I feel like you should get baptized. That's the only thing I could think of at the time. You should get baptized. I was like, hold on. Called the pastor, called my friend who was in the room down from me. I was like, do you have the keys to the truck? He's like, yeah. So all three of us jump in this big U-Haul. We're lumbering down the freeway. She's telling us her story. You know, it's really beautiful. We get there. They got the water running. She puts on her baptismal robe, and I put on the waders. You know, I've got these waders on. By this time, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm wading into the water, right? And I've got these things pulled on. She's standing right there, and you know, been part of baptizing a lot of people, but this I have never forgot it, and it was so shocking what happened. What went into the water and what came up out of the water was unlike anything I had ever experienced in terms of God's joy and God's presence. This woman was at the point of not wanting to live any longer. I baptized her, comes up out of the water, and she is like this, when I say brand new person, brand new. And her face is like, and she's like this, oh. And then she turns around like this, and she grabs me by the lapels of my shirt like this. She pulls me and she goes, "You never told me it would be this good." Stand with me, if you don't mind. And this is the life that Jesus offers you, and he puts it inside. Somebody, put your hand right here on your heart, your chest. Just say, in here, God's presence wants to dwell. Hold one hand up like this and say, Jesus, I want you to fill me with joy, with peace, with love, with your life. I open up my heart to you. Come inside. I turn my back on shame. I turn my back on guilt. I turn my back on all the darkness that's around me. I face you. Come into my heart, Lord Jesus. Now stand there for a moment with your hands up, and I want you just to see God answering that prayer. See the joy of heaven. See that what Jesus says, I'm going to put inside of you a fountain of living water that will spring and gurgle and bubble up all the way into everlasting life. I'm going to put that inside. I want you just to see that coming into your heart right now, coming into your life right now, coming into your home, coming into your workplace, coming into your school, coming into your neighborhood, coming into the restaurant that you're going to. Just you see that well, that springing up of water, living into everlasting life. It's in you. It's coming inside of you. It's welling up within you. It's a joy unlike anything the world can give you. It's a peace that goes beyond understanding. It's a love that is unconditional. That is happening inside of you right here, right now. In a moment, our prayer leaders and prayer team, they're going to come down here and they're going to stand around the front, and we're going to be available to pray with you. And when they come down here and they stand around the front, if you are here today and you have been experiencing just dark thoughts, or you've been just really down, or really, really, really discouraged, or you've just been maybe grieving something that's going on, I would invite you to come forward. I feel like there's just going to be, it happened in the first service, there's going to be just a healing river of God's Spirit and presence that's going to wash right through here. And if you're needing that joy, needing that peace, just come stand down here in a moment and we'll be praying with you. If for the first time in your life you prayed that prayer that I was leading everybody in and you just embraced Jesus Christ into your heart, we're going to throw a QR code up here on the screen. I want you to scan that. This week, we'll send you your first 7 days. It's a little journey that you walk through, 7 questions, the 7 most important questions we typically ask when we come to faith in Jesus. We'll send that to you and let you receive that. Would you raise your hands back up to heaven one more time and say, Jesus, thank you for your presence and your Spirit that's with us here today.